Welcome to another episode of 30 Minutes in the New Testament. 30 Minutes in the New Testament is a 1517 Podcast Network podcast. You can go to 1517.org/podcast and check out all the other podcasts that are living over there. While you're over there, make sure you check out all the other things that 1517 has to offer, all the articles, videos, the academy classes, all of the things that 1517 has for you. You want to check it all out. Now, Eric, the Here We Still Stand conference is sold out.
Sold out.
Sorry, guys.
The earliest we've ever sold out for the Here We Still Stand conference.
I warned you. I told you. There's no shortage of me telling you, but that is the case. But good news, there is going to be a live stream, and so you can check out the live stream. There is more information about that, which will be coming up soon. You can sign up for it. It's free. You don't have to pay for it, so you'll be able to watch all the main sessions, and that'll be great. All right, Eric. Indeed. Last week, we ended with Jesus being arrested, presumably John, getting Peter a little close to the action as Jesus is about to be on trial. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And somebody asks Peter, hey, aren't you one of his disciples? And Peter says, I am not. And that's where we had to leave it, right there at the first of Peter's three denials.
Yep, we're right in the middle of the action as Jesus is being put on a fake trial, a show trial. Pick it up at verse 19 of chapter 18 in John. It says, the high priest then questioned Jesus about his disciples and his teaching. Jesus answered him, I have spoken openly to the world. I have always taught in synagogues and in the temple where all Jews come together. I have said nothing in secret. Why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me what I said to them. They know what I said. When he had said these things, one of the officers standing by struck Jesus with his hand, saying, is that how you answer the high priest? Jesus answered him, if what I said is wrong, bear witness about the wrong. But if what I said is right, why do you strike me? Annas then sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest.
Yeah.
So as we've said, Dan, this is show trial. This is tell us what you teach, tell us what your disciples believe, etc. And Jesus doesn't say anything particularly offensive. Jesus doesn't say anything that's scandalous. He says, I've always been very clear. I've taught in places where anyone can hear me, especially Jews, synagogues and the temple. Ask them. They'll tell you what I've taught.
Yeah, it almost seems like what they're trying to set up here is, what are you planning? What are the things that you and your disciples talk about in secret? What is your secret agenda here? And Jesus just says, that's not going on. The kind of stuff I say to everybody. I've taught publicly for 3 years now. Ask people what I say. I mean, and because what you see here is they don't have an actual charge yet. So
besides, you said mean things to us because you don't like what we're doing.
Right. That you're a threat to our religious authority, but that's probably not going to be enough. We need like an actual charge here. Jesus answers that way, gets slapped, and then Jesus says, hey, man, look, how would you like me to answer him? There's no answer to this question. I've done a lot of teaching. Mm-hmm. For which of my teachings am I on trial here for?
Yep. And so now we get to the second denial of Peter. It says now, verse 25, Simon Peter was standing and warming himself. So they said to him, you also are not one of his disciples, are you? Now, the reason that they are picking up on the possibility of Peter being one of Jesus' disciples is because, of course, he is a Galilean and probably has that dialect. And so to the degree that they've heard Peter, they've seen Peter, they're starting to put the pieces together. And again, he denied it and said, I am not. One of the servants of the high priest, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, asked, did I not see you in the garden with him?
This is an interesting thing. I literally say, are you sure? Because I could have swore that I saw you cut my brother's ear off.
That's right. It's like, I'm pretty sure it was you that was wielding the knife.
I would remember that face anywhere. It was the face behind the sword that cut my brother's ear off.
It's pretty hard to deny that one. But nevertheless, you know, Peter is going full force with it. And so, again, Peter denied it, and at once a rooster crowed. And, of course, this is the fulfillment of the prophecy that Jesus had given Peter earlier that evening, as Peter boastfully said to Jesus that he would go with him anywhere. that he would die with him, that he would not let anything happen to Jesus when push comes to shove. Peter is overwhelmed, very understandably. He's a human being. He's like anybody. But nevertheless, he gives in to his fear and denies Jesus and his association with him.
Yeah, the last one is the most understandable one, right? At first, mm-hmm. they say, are you one of his disciples? You're like, well, I mean, this guy is on trial. You can understand the fear there. And they ask again, are you not one of his disciples? And he denies it. And you can understand. I mean, Jesus is getting slapped around up there, and it's not looking great. He's not defending himself the way that Peter would like him to. But then you have a guy say, hey, didn't you cut off the ear of somebody? Like, all right, now this seems like something you might get in trouble for.
And not just did you cut off the ear of somebody, did you cut off the ear of somebody related to the high priest?
Yes.
Like a temple guard.
Yes.
Like that's problematic. So, you know, whatever has happened to Jesus could very easily happen to Peter. And so understandably, again, Peter says, no, I'm not part of it. When I say understandably, it doesn't mean justifiably, because of course, Peter ought not to have denied Christ.
Correct.
He does. Right. He does. And the rooster crows, and Peter acknowledges the rooster crowing, and it causes him to weep, even though John doesn't report those specific details. The other gospels do. As a matter of fact, even when this happens, we know that Jesus looks at Peter.
Yeah.
So it's not just the rooster crowing. It is looking into the eyes of the man that he calls Lord and recognizing his failure.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, because Peter is bold enough to be very close to where Jesus is. I mean, close enough that Jesus can look at him. And so that's a certain degree of boldness there, but not bold enough to not deny that he is his disciple under pressure. You know, one of the things that's interesting that I've thought is strange, or just one of the things I've thought was interesting to think about, is that this person brings up Peter chopping off the ear of one of the king's guard or the high priest guard, right? And while they're questioning Jesus, you would think that they could say, is it true that one of your disciples assaulted one of our temple guards and cut his ear off? They don't bring that up. And now this, I'm just kind of speculating here, but it's a little bit of fun. You're not building any doctrines off of this, but I'm just trying to get into the narrative here. It seems that maybe the reason, because like that's something, like that's a little, you got something there, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, Jesus puts this ear back on this guy's head and heals it. So not a lot of evidence that this guy had his ear cut off, I would assume. But also, you could say like, well, still, people could say that, yeah, he did cut it off, and then this guy put it back on. Well, they can't have that, because they're not trying to make this guy out to be God.
No, that's right. That's
so,
right.
So they actually have something where Peter like struck a man, cut his ear off. You could say like, hey, your followers are violent. The problem with bringing it up is that Jesus healed him, and now the people are going to be like, that's miraculous. And they're not trying to lean too heavily into the miraculous God powers of Jesus.
Yeah, well, this is why they end up convicting him for blasphemy and for performing sorcery. They want desperately for people to see it as sorcery. It's kind of hard to call sorcery putting an ear back on a guy's head.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it just happened. It's like, well, that goes a little bit beyond what the local magicians are doing for fun with some cards.
Yeah, well, they're going to ultimately get him for is blasphemy.
Yeah, that's
because
right.
Because what are you supposed to do? Say, is it true you fed 5,000 people?
Yes.
Is it true that you raised someone from the dead on the Sabbath? Even the most staunchly religious commoners would be like, I don't know, man. Like, we really going to like string this guy up for raising people from the dead or healing people healing the sick? What are we doing here? They got to get, and that's why they're asking, what do you teach? Like, we got to figure out, we can't use any of that stuff.
Yeah. You know, to bring up another little area of speculation that's done in the show, The Chosen. One of the things I liked, and I've only seen a few episodes, but one of the things I liked about what they were doing was showing Nicodemus having to deal with the reality that Jesus was capable of doing things, miracles that he hadn't seen before. He was capable of exercising demons and other powers that no one else had the power to do. And this is kind of causes curiosity in Nicodemus. And we know that in John 3 that shows. We don't know to the extent what Nicodemus saw and what he didn't. But it just goes, it does go to show this fact that miracles can have the ability to, on the one hand, make someone more curious about who Jesus is and draw them to the possibility that Jesus is, in fact, the Messiah. But it also has the opposite effect, which is what you see here with the Sadducees and with the Pharisees at the, you know, the Sanhedrin, which is we need to stop it. We yeah. need to stop this because it's getting in the way of our authority.
Right.
And that's really what motivates all of this. And so picking it up again at verse 28, it says, then they led Jesus from the house of Caiaphas to the governor's headquarters. It was early morning. They themselves did not enter the governor's headquarters so that they would not be defiled, but could eat the Passover. You got to love that, Dan. You yeah. got to love them knowing that they are participating and leading a false trial to falsely imprison and falsely kill, crucify this man. But nevertheless, really fulfilling what Jesus has to say about them in criticism. They won't go into the governor's house because it would defile me.
Yeah, you got a bunch of guys that are like, we're going to find a way. We're going to concoct, construct, manufacture a way to get rid of this guy. Hey, but don't get dirty, all right?
Dude, it's the best picture of legalism ever. Like the way legalism works when it's ensnared a human heart is that it focuses on the minors and somehow justifies doing major sin.
Yeah, it's like it's
so
listen,
typical.
Well, listen, as we plot and scheme to murder someone, make sure that you don't get spiritually dirty.
Yeah,
that's incredible.
Hey, bro, while you were whipping Jesus, did you happen to touch anything that was unclean? Because you better do that ceremonial washing.
Just wild.
But again, it is very, very human. It's like this is what legalism
does.
This,
we do this stuff today all the time, dude. All the time. You know,
absolutely.
Yeah. You hear a little bit of gossip or something, and then you mm-hmm. go to someone and you're like, I'm gonna go tell so and so about this. I'm gonna spread this reputation destroying rumor to this other person. But then also you say, I'm going to do that as soon as I finish my quiet time.
Yes, 100%, that. Dude. 100%. And anybody listening to this knows that this is a thing, that this kind of thing happens way too regularly. And so of course, but that's why, because they need to eat the Passover and they do need to eat the Passover. They're the religious leadership. They need yeah. to be able to show that they are the ones that can, of all people, do this. And so verse 29, Pilate went outside to them and said, what accusation do you bring against this man?
That, by the way, this response is incredible because it's the same as saying we don't have one.
Just trust us, won't you?
Yeah. Like
they answered him. Verse 30, if this man were not doing evil, we would not have delivered him over to you.
This is not
isn't it obvious?
This would be a horrific justice system. Right? Can you imagine?
What, you think we'd be here if it wasn't for this man doing great evil?
Here, could you imagine like going up to a police officer on the street, be like, hey, I need you to arrest that guy over there. What do you do? If he didn't do anything, would I be telling you to arrest him? I mean, come on.
Well, isn't it obvious?
Do you take
isn't
me for,
it obvious?
What do you take me for, a liar?
And so Pilate, you know, he's been around the block a little bit. Pilate said to them, take him yourselves and judge him by your own law. This seems logical. Hey, okay, this is an intramural problem. You know, this is an interreligious problem. You have your way of dealing with this. You take care of
it. Well, I think the way that Pilate reads this is that they're like, listen, trust us. He's done bad things. And Pilate's like, I feel like you're bringing him to me for doing something that you don't like, but that certainly Rome doesn't have any laws about.
Yep.
Like, guess
at
what,
least
guess what,
initially,
guess what Rome
that's the way it works.
Yeah, guess what Rome doesn't have any laws about? Blasphemy.
Yep, they don't care. I mean, they really don't care, you know, what religions people are or whatever. That's not the issue for Rome. Rome will let you be a faithful Jew.
Well, like, I mean, even if it wasn't that way, can you imagine, like, that would be like going to the authorities in the United States or something and trying to say, governor, do you not understand that this man over here is guilty of heresy? Yeah, the governor's like, look, man, like, we don't have laws against being a heretic, okay?
That's right.
Like, we don't have mm-hmm. that. That's the situation you're in. Like, this is like, they want to attach some kind of religious law breaking to Jesus. Rome does yes. not care about your orthodoxy.
Well, and this is where, you know, Pilate is going to be confronted by the reality of what the leadership wants, because it says right after that, the Jews said to him, it is not lawful for us to put anyone to death.
Yeah.
In other words, we don't have the authority to crucify him. We need you for that.
Yeah. I also assume that Pilate at this moment was like, whoa, we're talking about killing somebody?
Yeah. Well, and you can see that from the rest of the Gospels' accounts of Pilate's reaction, that Pilate is kind of like, whoa, 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 whoa. This is way beyond my purview here. I don't know that this man's done anything worthy to be killed.
I don't even know if he's done anything worthy of being here.
That's right.
Never mind.
That's right.
Like, I mean, what do you mean? We're gonna kill this guy? That's what we're gonna do?
Yeah. Yep. And as we see, you know, their response is, he has broken laws that are worthy of death according to our religion. That's not gonna work. You will see what works to get Pilate to finally give in. But we pick it up in verse 32. It says, this was to fulfill the word that Jesus had spoken to show by what kind of death he was going to die. So this is, again, John reminding us who's in control. Pilate thinks he's in control. The religious establishment thinks they're in control. But John wants to remind us, no, no, no. This is all to fulfill what Jesus had been telling his disciples was going to happen. This is what's going to happen. He's going to die. So Pilate entered his headquarters again and called Jesus and said to him, are you the king of the Jews? Jesus answered, do you say this of your own accord, or did others say it to you about me? Pilate answered, am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you over to me. What have you done? Jesus answered, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom is not from the world. Then Pilate said to him, so you are a king. Jesus answered, you say that I am a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. Pilate said to him, what is truth? Now, let's just stop there, because this dialogue is fascinating to me. You can see that Pilate is trying to find a way to make this work in some way.
I think that you've probably seen this, Eric. This is very popular nowadays. You know, the philosophical waters that we find ourselves swimming in, people will bring up this statement by Pilate a lot. They'll say, oh, it all started 2,000 years ago when Pilate uttered the words, what is truth? I don't read it that way. I just don't. Like, I don't think Pilate is trying to do this thing. Like, there's no such thing as truth. I don't think Pilate
knows. He's not the world's first ethical relativist?
I don't think so. I think Pilate's like, I don't know what's going on here, man. As opposed to him being like Derrida asking what is truth or something, I think he's more like Jerry Maguire saying, help me help you. That's why I think this is like, well,
Dan, I like the contrast. I just want to make it very clear that I appreciate the contrast of Derrida and Jerry Maguire, and I prefer the philosopher known as Jerry Maguire. I'm just going to go out on a limb there and say I think Jerry Maguire has more to say to us than Derrida.
Dude, am I wrong? Maybe. And I don't know. Like, I know I've heard a lot of people use this. I just think, I mean, if you look at this exchange, Pilate is understandably confused about what is going on.
Yeah, he's flummoxed, dude. He wants to know.
He's just like, are you a king of the Jews? He's like, Jesus says, you say this of this own. Did you just make this up? Or did others say it about me? And Pilate says, dude, am I a Jew? Like, your nation and chief priests have delivered you over to me. Like what did you do? What's going on here, man? Like, what are they so upset about? And then Jesus says, my kingdom is not of this world. My kingdom, if it were of this world, my servants would have been fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews, but my kingdom is not of this world.
He is saying he's a king, though, by the way. I mean, like, that's what he's saying.
Yeah.
And Pilate picks up on it. Oh, so you are a king.
So Pilate's like, okay, so you are a king. And he says, you say that I'm a king. And Pilate's got to be like, No, you just said that you were.
You just said my kingdom. You just said mine.
Yeah.
Possessive word.
But then Jesus is like, listen, man. I'm not accusing Jesus here of like of being stubborn or argumentative. Jesus means to die. Jesus is not trying to get himself off the hook. That's why he says, For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come to the world. What purpose? This right now. It's going down. My purpose is going down right here. To bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. So this is why Pilate is asked this question. Okay, so your this is your purpose. You're going to bear witness about the truth. What truth are we – what are we talking about right now? Like the truth that you're a king, the truth about your religion. I don't know what the crime is here. So he says, what is truth? What?
Yep.
In other words, what is this truth that you're bearing witness about? That's why. That's how I read it.
I think it's the same thing. I don't think Pilate is an ethical relativist. I don't think that he was fumbling around with postmodernism back then. I know that there's been a lot of hay made over this statement, and it's understandable. It applies to our age where there is a lot of questioning about, you know, whether there are absolutes and whether there is truth. But just to echo what you said, I don't think that that is the point here. I think in context, again, he's just saying, I don't know what to believe.
The way that some would read this is Pilate is saying, there's no such thing as truth.
Yeah,
I don't think it's that. I think it's what he's saying is, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yes,
which,
that's right.
By the way, of course he doesn't.
Yes, he has no reason to know. And so it says in the tail end of verse 38, after he had said this, he went back outside to the Jews and told them, I find no guilt in him.
Yeah.
And yes, according to Roman law, there is no guilt in him.
Mm-hmm.
He's not done anything that is certainly worthy of death. And he's even saying no guilt at all. Like, I don't find any reason for him to be here.
Yeah, and even though Jesus has said, like, yeah, I have a kingdom, it's not of this world and stuff, Pilate, you know, declaring yourself to be a king might be something that, you know, Rome would be concerned with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But Pilate's like, I don't know, man, this guy says he's got, like, a kingdom that's not of this world, and his followers are, like, nonviolent or whatever. Like, I'm not seeing it.
Well, and in the other Gospels, this does have more weight in Pilate's decision-making. Because the way that they go about this, the way that the religious establishment goes about this, is by claiming that he is wanting to take over Caesar's throne.
Yes.
He wants to usurp that authority. And so in that regard, Pilate does have to take that seriously. Is it possible that this man is looking to overthrow my emperor? Because if it is, and I don't snuff it out, that's a problem for me. I get in trouble.
But what's interesting about that, too, is that's the thing that Jesus overtly says that he's not trying to do, and the thing that so many people want him to do.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, even the Sanhedrin that is insistent on his crucifixion probably would have been very happy if he did operate that way.
Yeah.
If he had rounded all of them up to sort of push back against the Roman occupiers, it may not have led to his crucifixion at all.
Especially
it may have led to him being hailed.
Especially if he was, like, you know, doing some Old Testament kind of miracles where, you know, he gave them a little glimpse of, like, fire from heaven and stuff. He said, look at the kind of power I have. What do you say? We take this thing back.
Yeah.
But Jesus is not interested in this at all. Like, so again, they're accusing him of, certainly Jesus is Lord, he is king, but it's not the kind of king that is looking to go kick Caesar off the throne so he can sit in it.
That's right. And so Pilate comes to, again, the religious establishment and says, but you have a custom that I should release one man for you at the Passover. So do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews?
See, and this is why
I think this is a genuine question, Dan.
Yeah, and I think that he is, this shows you that he understands the king accusation, but he's not taking it that seriously in the sense that I think he thinks Jesus is a little bit of like a hippie weirdo.
Probably.
Like, I don't think he thinks,
because,
like,
again,
this guy
this isn't
is like
the first time that Pilate has come across somebody that's either claiming to be Messiah or whose followers are calling him Messiah. This isn't the first time he's been through this kind of spectacle.
Yeah, I think that Pilate believes that Jesus is not interested in, like, organizing the revolt. He's like, this ain't the guy.
Yes, I think so too. And so I think he genuinely asked the question. All right, I've examined him. I've talked to him. Do you want me to release him to you? And they cry out, not this man, but Barabbas. Now, Barabbas was a robber. Yeah. Now, we've pointed out, Dan, first of all, the word robber can be translated insurrectionist. Mm-hmm. Barabbas is, I mean, if there's anybody that probably Pilate isn't real fond of releasing, it's an actual insurrectionist.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, this is the custom. This is what he's promised to do every Passover. He'll release a prisoner for them. And who do they want? They want the actual insurrectionist instead of the one who says, don't worry, I'm not here to threaten your kingdom.
Yeah, they asked for Barabbas, an actual dude who was trying to lead a political revolt.
Mm-hmm.
They asked for him instead of the guy who, you know, says he's a king, but is also like, pray for your enemies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this is where everything begins to go down, because Pilate gives into their demand. He does release Barabbas, which, again, it's important to point out, even though we've done this in all the other Gospels, that the name Barabbas literally means son of the father. And so you do have this hint at the great exchange taking place, where you have the true and better son of the father being handed over to die, whereas the insurrectionist son of the father is being set free in spite of his treason and insurrectionist behavior against the true and better king.
Yeah, I mean, what you see here is the same thing that you see shadowed in Jesus saying, I am, all the soldiers falling back, then Jesus saying, if I'm who you're looking for, let them go. Like, you have sinner followers of Jesus being released, and Jesus going and being arrested. Then you have here people crying out that Barabbas should be set free and Jesus should be crucified. This is all to show you when Jesus says, this is the purpose, man, this is the purpose.
This is the purpose, yes. As scandalous as it could have been at the time for a guy like Barabbas to be released, and as scandalous as it is in our time for sinners like Barabbas to be forgiven and set free at the cost of the perfect Son of God, with nothing else added to it. We don't ever read about what happens to Barabbas after this. There's nothing in Scripture about what Barabbas goes on to do.
Right.
All we know is that he was a man that was destined for punishment for his sins that has now been set free from the punishment for his sins.
Don't you think it's interesting, too, that, you know, when Pilate comes back outside, it says he turns to the Jews. At this point, there's a lot of people there. Peter's out there, or was out there. I mean, it's not just like he's having a conversation with four, you know, religious leaders, whatever. There's like a crowd of people there now. And he says,
there's a mob.
Yeah, he says to the Jews, he says, hey, you want me to release the king? Like, I feel like this is almost like, I'm not going to even ask you. I'm going to ask the people.
Yes.
Right? And people say, nah, give us Barabbas. At this point, the people have turned and realized that Jesus is not the Roman overthrowing better
David. He's not the insurrectionist they were looking for.
And they ask for him. They're like, give us that guy back. That guy actually, we prefer the political Messiah.
That is entirely correct. And man, a word of warning for God's church throughout all of history, and certainly today, it is very easy to prefer the political Messiah because of short-term gains that you think you will have as a result. Mm-hmm. But in the end, it leads to nothing but death, as it does for the religious establishment here and for the people of Jerusalem eventually, as indeed Jerusalem will be overthrown not too long after this, as Jesus prophesied. But the good news is that Jesus is in the habit of giving forgiveness of sins to people like Barabbas, to people like you and I, and yes, even to people like Pilate and the religious establishment, because he goes to the cross for all.
That's right. And that is it, man. We're going to leave it right there at the end of chapter 18. We will pick it back up with chapter 19 next week. Eric, I'll see you then.
All right, sounds good.